Bikes, brotherhood, bullets and booties. This episode is truly chaotic. From biker bosses making side deals to baby surgeons fixing booty holes, the multiple hit squads and lots of bodies going in holes. It's the fallout episode from Agent Cone, the failed hit on Clay by the Mayans, and it's all absolute chaos. Hi, and welcome to Belated Binge Sons of Anarchy, the re-binge podcast that doesn't take itself or the show too seriously. I'm Zach, your host, revisiting some of the most iconic series in recent memory that I nearly missed out on, and thank God I didn't. And today I have my first guest along for the ride as we continue our binge of season one with episode 9, Hell Followed.
The Belated Binge Podcast.
Before we get into it, there will be spoilers. Obviously, there will also be adult language and situations. Earmuff the children. Shout out to Katie holding down the bonus binge squad. More on Patreon later. Before we jump in, I'd like to introduce my first, count them, one ever guest on the Sons of Anarchy binge. It's McTuggy from like 7 different podcasts you do. I don't, you can do the lineup for the people.
I kind of overextended myself a little bit when I started it. I'm McTuggy. I the host of Tuggy's Top 10 podcast, where I talk about my all-time top 10 favorite movies, and then and also 35 years of movies, where me and my brother talk about the number one movie from each year from 1986 to 2021. And then I do Daddy and Daughter Story Time with my daughter, where we just sit down and talk about whatever she wants to talk about. And then I have Tuggy Talk 2.0, which is just basically just me sitting down with a guest, just BSing about whatever. And it's a little bit. And, yeah.
I think most of that's available on the same feed, right?
Yes. That's all available on the same feed. The only one that isn't on the Spotify feed is one I started with my sister called Coco and McTuggy's Pod of Horror, which we have our first video. That's going to be strictly YouTube. That's up. We talk about The Ginger Dead Man, which is a Gary Busey classic, I guess. It's right. A gnarly movie. It's all gnarly.
All right. So what's your tie to Sons of Anarchy? What's your like mini SOA story?
So I had heard about this show, and I didn't really jump on it the first, like, I want to say the first couple seasons. And then I had, I was going through my Facebook page one day, and I saw a couple buddies talking about it. And one of the posts was, oh my God, Jax is going to fucking kill somebody. And it was talking to the ending of season 2. Which you haven't got to yet in your series yet, but that ending.
Yeah, oh, it is
going into season 3. Like I was like, okay, what's this about? I got to check it out. So I think this is back when Netflix still had discs. So I ordered the first couple discs off of Netflix and sat down with my parents and watched it. And I had to immediately get the rest of it and finish up season 1. And from there, it was like anything I could do to catch up. And then so from there, I got up to about season 3 had just ended, and I was waiting every week for season 4 on. So,
you know, the best thing about being super late to everything that's good is that it's already out. You get to binge it.
Exactly. And that's, you know, that's how I felt the first 3 seasons. I was like, yes. And then I was like, oh, God, I got to wait a fucking week every time now.
Yeah. Damn. At least it was only a week. Well, at least.
Yeah.
Except for in between seasons, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
I have the Harry Potter binge going on this same feed, and I talk to people that like grew up in that, and they're like, we had to wait like 3 years between books. And I'm like, that's
rough.
That would hurt.
Yeah. Two of those movies are going to be coming up on 35 years, actually.
Oh,
the nice. Very first, yeah, it'll be my first time ever watching Harry Potter, so that'll be interesting. Yeah, we got the first movie coming up, and I believe it's the very last one, Deathly Hallows Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
That's the final in the book. Okay.
So, yeah, it'll be weird. That's the last one of the Harry Potter series.
Right, yeah. There's Fantastic Beasts and all that other one stuff. Yeah. But, yeah, so it'll be interesting watching it from the first and then watching the very last.
Nice.
You know? So, yeah.
Nice.
So that'll be fun.
No, that'll be good. I haven't done the movies on this podcast. I did jump on when I concluded the first book, got through all the chapters. I jumped on with a father-son podcast when they reviewed the first movie. I posted it on this feed and stuff like that too. But cool. I haven't got to do a lot with the movies yet.
I mean, coming down the road. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Coming down the road, bro, you're more than welcome to jump on them episodes too. And SOA is going to be getting an episode of season two of Tuggy's Top 10 podcast when I do my favorite TV shows. So
I'm in. Let's do it.
More content. Love it.
All right. So this episode is Hell Followed, which is an adequate title. But before we
do it. Very well titled.
Before we do it, I want to do the thing that I've been trying to do with all of these, and it's getting harder and harder. And I can't imagine once I get into some of those later seasons how the hell I'm going to pull this off. But for now, I'm going to try to introduce each episode as if they were a romantic comedy. Let's do it.
Yes, I love these.
Love is hard. Loving through murder, an overzealous mother, and bullet holes and booties, almost impossible. Especially for a young doctor with a promising career to live for. But the heart wants what the heart wants. I mean, have you seen those abs? Let's jump in to episode 9, Hell Followed, which opens up on a car, which doesn't happen very often in this show. This is Jax cleaning up the mess, and it's a crack of dawn disposing of a body, which is, I mean, that's how I started my morning. Is that, what you did this morning?
I dumped two of them today before we even did this thing. So
yeah, absolutely. And later in the episode,
nothing.
Right. Later in the episode, we're going to burn one. So here's the thing that I want to see if we can figure out throughout the full experience for Sons of Anarchy. What criteria does it have to reach for a burning or a bury?
That's a good point. that's a very good point, because there are certain times where you see him just drop him in a hole, and then. And even then, that extends to the question, put him six, don't put him too deep without a mark, or put a marker on it, or bury him deep, no marker. Like,
yeah,
where's the difference in that,
Yeah, it's like there's a qualification process. They got to fill out paperwork. All right, what does this kill mean? Okay, that goes in the shallow graves over there. Where does this?
Yeah, we might need him.
Next.
App.
That part makes sense to me, right? Like the shallow grave market, make sure we can get to it in case we need it, aka this might come back up later in the show. But if murdering a federal agent doesn't qualify as burn this and make sure no one ever finds him, why does some random hit qualify?
That's a good point too. Yeah, exactly.
That keeps me up at night.
That's fair. I noticed Jax is using Tara's car to dump Cohen's body. And then when it gets to the scene of her sitting in there, and she's, you'll get to where she pukes and all that, she notices blood on the bathroom floor still.
Mm-hmm.
I really hope Jax cleaned up her car real well or wrapped that body super good, because he's going to have to do some serious Clorox to that shit,
I mean, these are mechanics, right? So we're just gonna replace the carpet. It's fine.
That's fair. Yeah, they probably just very good point. Hey, LOL, we need a new carpet.
LOL, we need to care about you again. Come replace this carpet.
Yeah, exactly.
She's not taking it well. She pretty much vomits on her toothbrush, which is there's a joke in there somewhere. To an old comedian that I just can't for the life of me remember, so I can't really do the bit, but it had to do with the size of certain objects and a certain woman that he knew that gagged on her toothbrush but could perform a different act without any issues. And that's fair. What always reminds me in this particular scene.
Yeah, nope, that's a good one. I put that, she she's just not having it. She's thinking about it. And like I said, once she sees that blood on the floor, and just all over her toothbrush, I'm like, yep, throw that bitch away. Go buy a new one.
Yeah, we haven't gotten to Oral-Bs yet in whatever year this is taking place in. So
yeah, they're pretty cheap. Right? Yeah, exactly.
I imagine it's a natural reaction, though, given what she was just through in the past, like, 12 hours.
Right. I've heard the saying that, you know, your first kill, you usually puke. I mean, granted, she didn't kill it, but but she was there, and that's a pretty terrifying thing to see your man just pop a dude in the fucking head right in your bedroom, like, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. And nobody heard anything. Also, by the way.
And you got to imagine Tara lives in like a decent neighborhood in Charming.
She has
like
neighbors.
Somebody's going to report that fucking gunshot, like, or both, actually, because she shoots him in the fucking gut.
Yeah, we've got a lot of screaming. We've got multiple gunshots. Nothing. Nobody hears anything. And that's a theme in the Sons of Anarchy, in the Sutterverse in general. You have to suspend disbelief and
imagine.
Imagine everybody's wearing earmuffs pretty much at all times. Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah, that's fair.
I caught myself on rewatches going like, God, the paperwork that the people are having to do and like all the crime scene people going through, like, oh my God, nine Niners are dead or three Mayans are dead over here or whatever, you know. It's like, oh my God, holy shit.
How can we not figure out who's doing this?
Yeah, right. It can't clearly be the outlaw motorcycle club in our town, but mm-mm, whatever.
No. So apparently, speaking of that outlaw club, they and Gemma are all freaking out because this grown-ass tough biker man missed curfew and isn't picking up his phone. Yep. I imagine he didn't get a chance to update his voicemail to, sorry, I missed your call. I'm currently murdering a federal agent and need to throw him in a hole. Please leave a message after the gunshot.
Yeah, I don't imagine he had very much time to. He's probably at this point, he's still processing it when he's burning Cohen's body, I'm sure. Like, we'll see later on when he talks to Tara in the hospital. Like, this is rough for him, even.
Yeah, this is heavy. Very heavy.
Yeah. Very, very heavy.
But I do imagine that if anyone in this clubhouse was that concerned for his safety, no one thought to drive by Jax's house or Tara's house. Like,
right. No, like, well, we called him, but he's not picking up his cell phone. And okay, so you're not going to send Ope. Ope's not like, hey, I'll go out and drive by. I'll go here. And
no. Nope. How big is this town? It takes like 5 minutes to get anywhere.
It can't be very big at all. Like, I don't think, like, I come from a small town that's like 3,400 people.
I imagine this is 34 people.
That's what I'm saying. I imagine Charming's even smaller than that. And my town has one fucking headlight traffic light in the whole fucking city. So Charming can't be too big. So like,
nope.
Everybody knows everybody type deal.
Yep. It would be really, really difficult to go check two driveways and see his bike in one of them.
Yeah, extremely difficult. It couldn't take more than a 5-minute drive, you know, ride over on the bike. But they eventually do show up, though.
They do. Yeah, yeah. We're going to get to the point where logic actually comes into the episode
for a sec.
Right now, we're far, far from logic because Chibs is still working on our new IRA friend, and Unser stops by for a visit.
Oh, yes. I love this part.
I'm a fan of this conversation, particularly for the sports analogies. I love this. You know, last time I checked, you're rooting for the home team. This exchange brings me a lot of joy.
I like it. And one thing I put on a note is like, as soon as Unser comes in and talks about the hit on Darby and shit, what's Gemma do? Walks right up to Clay and goes, was this us? As if you're a member of the club.
Yeah. She,
and you see it throughout the rest of the series. She has such an influence on this club. It is insane. Doing research on real clubs? No.
Nope. That's not how it goes. Based on anything that I've consumed from the real outlaw MC world. I have zero firsthand. I feel like I have to give that disclaimer on a lot of these episodes because I do ride a motorcycle, but I do not wear a cut.
Right, right. And, yeah, no, I don't even ride a motorcycle. so I can, I will say I have hung out with a couple clubs at a barbecue one time that I was invited to. This guy I worked with it. But no, I got to go in and hang out in their clubhouse and whatnot. And at first it was extremely intimidating. But once I got in there, it was actually, I could feel the brotherhood type deal. Yeah. They were all super chill when we went there. And when I first got there before my friend that invited me over, he goes, when you walk in the door, there's a pillar. And he's like, on that pillar, there is a set of rules, 6 of them. Read them, abide by them. Won't be any problems. You'll have a good time.
Yeah.
That's so I was like, all right, I walked in there. Oh, that's easy.
Yeah.
Pretty basic shit. Don't be an asshole. Like,
right.
If you're told to leave, get the fuck out. Like,
yeah. Yeah. It's a very respect driven culture from the little bit that I know. And as long as you are doing that, then you're not going to have an issue.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, Chibs has found the bullet from the guy's ass. And
he pulls.
Oh my, it's a mess.
Cameron's not looking like he's having fun whatsoever.
No.
So, yeah. And when Chibs pulls that bullet out, that fucking blood spray.
Yeah, not for the queasy. This episode's not for the queasy. But thankfully, Juice has small figures.
Right? Shoves a finger. Chibs grabs his hand and just right up in there. And
just hold it back.
Okay.
And this, of all things, this is what sends Gemma into Axon Jackson mode. And finally, finally doing something logical. Going to Terra's to find Jackson Terra. Like, maybe that's where they are.
Oh, they might be over there. The one place we didn't look or attempt to call. Like, I imagine she's probably got Terra's number.
Somebody does. Tig is her escort. With a very well-timed escort joke. Very well-timed.
Oh, God, I love that. why do you do this to me? And she slams him in the things. This is why I beat hookers. I wrote that line down. It's one of my favorite. As much as I hate Tig throughout this first season, for sure.
Oh, so much. So much.
He's got some good lines. And this is one of them.
Yeah, he's got some zingers. I like him and Jax in the hospital. When he runs up to the nurses and just pulls his ass,
shows him his ass. So I said, distract him, not scare him or scar him.
yeah, ridiculous. So now we're getting the disappointed mom speech and the hard ass Tig act and all of that. And Jax doesn't have time for dealing with this nonsense.
No.
And I don't have time for it either. Like, this scene just annoys the ever-loving shit out of me every time I see it.
Yeah, because it's setting up, the beef between Jax and Tig. Like, Tig's, earlier in the other episodes, he told Clay, I don't believe he's going to be able to do it, whatever, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that was earlier, right? We haven't...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, right. So, yeah, I mean, he's obviously... And the thing about this is, too, is, he says he steps on his bike and he tells him not to forget his first priority. But at the same time, it's like, dude, recognize your rank.
Yeah.
You're just Sergeant at Arms. He's your VP.
Yeah. There's definitely some of that, I think, and here's the thing that I don't know as well. And I'm not going to pretend to know, but these are the two roles that sit at the immediate right and left of the president. What I don't know is when it comes to what is that relationship between those two if it came down to the two of them. I imagine VP does take precedent in those moments.
Right.
But by how much? You know what I mean?
That's a good point. That's a good point. Right. Because I mean, yeah. Yeah. Same. I couldn't even speculate all fucking day until I'm blue in the face. But yeah.
Yeah. Cause I to a certain extent, I wonder how close they are, and they are just different roles with a different skill set for the individuals in said roles.
It could,
I don't know.
That could, yeah, exactly. It could be. And I did do a while ago, I did a bunch of back research on the characters, and I know Tig patched before Jax did.
Oh yeah.
Cause he's one of the older, cause he's older than Jax and all that. So it's like, how long? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a tough one to think about. Yeah.
Yeah. I always imagine Tig kind of coming in with like the Bobby era.
I was thinking, cause you got the OGs, Clan, Piney.
Yeah.
Who were, you know, the last
they
two
were first nine.
First nine and all that. And then I imagine Bobby and Tig and Chibs all came later.
Yeah.
So, and then Opie and Jax are obviously like the new generation of the club. So,
yeah. Yeah. And then they've got their newbies. Cause like Juice was a Jax prospect. Juice. And
he was Jax's, cause Jax sponsored him. And then, I want to say he was the most recently patched.
Yeah.
As the show started.
Yeah.
Because they have, you know, they got half sack for the new prospect and all that. So.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So what happens next? Oh yeah. Credits. And this is where I sidebar. I'm obviously getting old when my Hulu ads start with an ED medication. Just throwing that out for everyone.
Bro, I see them all the fucking time when I'm scrolling through Facebook. I'm like, I'm only 37. Fuck it's off. Tough.
It's tough. It's either keep your hair or, hey, does your dick work? It's really hard to
you
be.
You need a blue chew or do you want some Hims?
Yeah, it's tough. The struggle is real. I know we're supposed to age with grace and get salt and pepper and all of that, but right now we're just getting peppered in the face with like... Something is not working anymore. You should fix that. Anyways, let's jump into the police station. This is where Darby's telling Hale the same thing that Clay told Unser, that the Mayans tried to kill him, not Sam Crow. And he goes, let's call it a little too far with his trying to get Hale to... You just can't punch cops. That's just not okay.
A
little frowned upon.
I can't quite remember exactly what... Hale says to him, but Darby straight up fucking hauls off and socks him. And I love that shot from the back of the cell in the, like, you're in the police office area, but you see Hale just fucking fly back and hit the wall and be like, motherfucker, like three other cops run in there. And what he says to Unser when he goes, are you okay? He goes, son of a bitch just got the jump on me or something, like got the drop on me or caught me off guard or something like that.
It's funny because it definitely seems like an escalation because Hale's a smug bastard about it. Cause I think the line that he says is something like, we'll look into your allegations. And
that's what it was. He's like, we'll look into it or whatever.
Yeah. But still, to go from telling your story to punching a cop in the face, and then Unser, who knew he still had a punch left in him.
Yeah. I love that line so much as they're dragging Darby out and Darby's talking shit about his wife. And he goes, you know I'm married to a brown-skinned woman, right? He goes, oh, yeah. Bam! Fucking hits him real good. He goes, okay.
Just making checking. Sure. Yeah, just making sure. God,
oh, good shit. I love
a fan of that. Unser hasn't done anything as a cop, but he did manage to punch Darby, which is great.
Hey, and Darby's a Nazi, so...
Darby's the worst.
Who cares?
I really, really hate Darby's character so much.
I fucking hate Darby. I do too. He's such a fucking dog shit. Even they try to redeem him in the end, but whatever. He's garbage.
Yeah, he is. I wish one of those bullets would have landed at literally any point in
time. I really do. It sucks that Asai botched that fucking hit, but
that won't come back later.
So yeah. No, not at all.
Our new friend wakes up with Juice's finger in his ass, which is... This is the comedic genius of this show in these early seasons. Mm-hmm. Like, this stuff is obviously it's geared toward a certain audience, but when you fall within that audience, it's hilarious.
It's so good. What is your hand? In your ass. You got your finger in my... Well, not in your ass, because that would be gay, more like in your butt, which I guess is still gay. Fucking choose.
I guess we should throw out the caveat. This was, what, mid, I guess, 2009 or something?
Yeah.
Certain language on this show doesn't pass the 2023 smell check.
No, there's a lot of shit they say in this series.
Oh my gosh,
they would not get away with it. It just, poor Juice, dude. He's just got to sit there with that freaking, like Jenna calls him later, the little Dutch boy.
It's bad. It's a bad day for Juice to just be like hanging out. Imagine if he has to pee.
Oh God.
We have our Irish guy, probably the only guy having a worse day than Juice. He's almost dead, right? Like, he's about to die on this table.
Yeah, if he bleeds out anymore, he's gone.
He's done, and he's pretty much incoherent, except for when he needs to push the plot forward and has a specific deadline for a specific target, for a specific hit that they were supposed to do. All those details are just perfectly fine.
Oh, hey! Hey, Stossman, by the way, you guys got to go kill this guy because obviously I can't. I got a finger in my ass.
Yeah.
Please? Otherwise, you guys ain't going to get your guns.
I don't know where I am. I don't know what happened. I don't know that I'm even going to live another 5 minutes. But this this hit is very, very fresh in my mind.
Yeah, hold on. By the way, I forgot.
Let me write it down for you. Hang on. Here's
his
all
name
the details.
Is Brennan Hefner. He's a port authority. He does this.
Spelled H-E-F. It's. I love this show, but occasionally the plot convenience is palpable.
Oh yeah, yeah. There's
Now we've got Jax and Opie. They're heading off to find Tara because Jax wants people to leave Tara alone.
Alone.
So now we have to go get her and bring her here.
Now we got to bring her back to this. Leave her alone, but now shit. All right.
We could have just brought her from the beginning.
I mean, no. Why not? But
this is something I wish we got more of, though. This, like, Jax and Opie time. We see a little bit. We get a little bit of it, but... Here's my issue that I have with this relationship throughout the series, because I feel like, and I'm paying a lot more attention to it on this rewatch, so maybe I'm going to continue to be surprised. But in my recollection of watching this series several times, let's just call it several, the Jax and Opie relationship, I feel, is a lot more told to us than shown to us throughout the series.
I get it. I totally understand what you're saying, because a lot of it is exposition from other people being like they grew up as best friends, or like through photographs, or you know, just small talk here and there, like, oh, your dad, because Piney and JT knew each other. And I agree, because you get this little talk with Jax trying to like be like, hey, you can't be half in, half out, but at the same time, this might be a little too heavy for you, and it's a good little dynamic, but yeah, you're right. We really don't get a lot of that.
No, there's not a lot of, like, there's not a lot of the just connection between these two characters, so when the heavy ones come, I feel like they don't hit as hard as they should, because... it's mostly been just Jax telling us, Opie's my best pal.
Opie's he's my best pal.
We don't really hang out, but he's my best pal.
I bought a crib off of him one time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's,
you know,
yeah.
I let him beat the shit out of some dumbass who got him arrested. But, you know, other than that, no, we don't kick it.
There's almost more chippiness between the two of them. They have more like old married couple spats throughout the series than I feel like they have, like, bro moments, I guess.
I agree. Like, for these two people, you're right. For two people who are supposed to be like this fucking best friends for life, dude, they,
there should be both.
There should be
more of both.
Yeah, they really should. There's too much of them focusing on their split.
Yeah.
As opposed to them reconvening and.
Yeah. And speaking of splits, Here comes Donna.
Oh,
I love Donna. Apparently, Obi's missing his shift at the wood chucking place or something.
I'm assuming he's a logger.
Yeah, I just
scene in the first episode. That's the only thing I could gather. Is like
it's
he's
the
a
only
logger.
Time he's there.
Right. So, yeah, I wrote here. I was like, poor Donna, because I mean, you can try to put yourself in her position as just like this single mother whose husband just got back out of jail, and he's trying to like go back to the element that put him there, and she's just like, motherfucker, we got bills to pay. You need to be going to your job. Like, I get it, but at the same time, it's like, oh God, Donna, he's all in.
Donna, yeah, it's
Donna.
The part that I didn't love is that this felt like a regression for these characters. Like,
right,
so much
it did,
for
because
Donna having this like understanding of Opie and his connection with the conversation she and Jax had, and that like nice moment with the fireworks a few episodes ago. Like,
exactly,
I thought
we
were headed towards a little bit of a like at least a flow towards we're getting our stuff back together. Now she's apparently the firework.
Yeah, we're starting to mend our fences and make everything work.
Yeah, and she's just forgotten that those scenes happened.
I agree. Yeah, all of a sudden, oh, you're going to lose your job? What, you haven't been going to work? Get your fucking ass to work, motherfucker.
Right. And this is another moment where I don't love Opie in this exchange and in this period for his character. Because I feel like the motivations are all off. He says stuff.
Right.
Again, it's another one of those characters saying things, but then actions showing something else. He says things like how much he owes Donna and how he promised Donna that he was gonna, you know, he was gonna earn straight and he was gonna, you know, be there for his family and all of this stuff. But now he wants to jump all into the club to fix their money issues, where she's clearly telling him money's not the problem. Like, they are obviously having money problems, but her problem is the club life.
She would be broke with this dude. Yeah. Like, I got no problem being broke with you as long as you know,
go to work.
You ain't doing out there fucking, go to work. You ain't going to get 5 more fucking years and leave me with these kids for 5 more years by myself. So, like I said, I get her position.
I don't get his. That's the thing. Like, I don't get his.
I don't either, because he's trying, like, why do you want to be back in the club so badly when you literally just spent 5 years in prison for them, and what did they do for you?
See, and that's the thing. Like, if this was written as he just can't get away from the club. Like, it's a part of him. He's a, you know, legacy, and he just can't be without that brotherhood, that piece of his life. Like, it's missing, and he's just pissing away his marriage for the club because of the club. Like, the club has, like, his connection. It means more to him than his family does. If you want to paint him in that light, I can at least follow the character motivation that gets him where he is. But they've spun it to where he's doing it for money. Like, that's your motivation? It doesn't make sense.
He wants the money so he can help his family.
Yeah.
But that's literally your only motivation. You don't want to hang out with your buddies. You don't, it's not about the brotherhood. It's just another fucking job for you.
Yeah.
Why not go get a normal 9-to-5 like you had, where you're not going to get fucking killed or possibly put in prison for the rest of your life? And just fucking deal with it like everybody else does.
Yeah. But it's just a weird, I feel like this scene pretty much on its own within this episode, it's just a weird character arc dynamic for both he and Donna that just didn't feel like it fit for me.
Yeah. It feels like it should have been a scene that her and him arguing over that should have been like an episode or two ago.
Yeah, so several episodes ago,
like you said,
or it's a rehash, and again, I feel like it's the wrong motivation for what his character really is feeling,
for sure,
Like, the way that I interpret Opie is not the club is my financial backing. It's I literally can't leave this club. Like, this club is my blood, and I can't get out. Because he ends up going through all kinds of shit for this club that should have, like, turned him off, and he can't stay away.
Oh, yeah.
Plant that here. That's true. Not it's money problems. And it's going to solve his Well, half our fights are about money. If I can just get in with the club and make more money, then she'll shut up. And it's like, I don't.
It's like, okay, well,
that's the case.
Yeah, I mean, she'll probably shut up about the money, but at the same time, you're gonna just add more shit on top of the other half of the shit that you have already that you don't know.
You might be able to afford the child support and alimony when she leaves you. All right, so now we got Clay and Unser, and they're at the police station. And Clay's like explaining the whole Mayan situation. And this is enjoyable because Unser's just unraveling. Clay lights up a cigar. Unser lights up a joint.
Clay looks at him. He goes, it's full of cancer. I got a card. Like, he like, I got a card. Like, do you want me to show it to you? Like, I'm the chief of police. Fuck off. You're a fucking outlaw. What do you care that I'm smoking a joint?
Right. It's like the roles are reversed. It is genius.
Exactly.
Genius.
It's so good.
And that's what's funny, because the same writers, I feel like, screwed up the Opie and Donna stuff just one scene ago and absolutely nailed this one scene later.
Yeah, you're very right. He's like the line when you start, because they're talking, like you said, about the Mayan thing and how bodies are dropping in Charming now, and like, you need to figure out what the hell is going on, and all of a sudden here come the rest of the charters down Main Street. And Unser's just like, did you not listen to a fucking thing and some fucking thing I said? He goes, it's just a family reunion. Calm down.
Yeah. I heard you. I got it. I understood.
I got it.
As if Clay was just like telepathically calling these bikes to him as Unser is going through his diatribe. Right. Like, he's bitching at me 6 hours ago.
No, not at all. You wouldn't think I would do that. And then, like, again, the line right before the end of the scene, he goes, if you don't, you know, come to this decision, you're gonna have 12 charters sitting around a table plotting to kill.
Yeah.
So you better figure it out. Like,
put it at the top of that old cop to-do list.
Yes, there he goes. Like, so, I thought I wasn't an old cop or an old friend. He's like, I thought you were an old friend. He goes, no, I'm an old cop, remember?
Yeah. And I like this too.
Yeah.
I like this with Clay. I've given Clay a lot of shit on this podcast for his decisions that he's made at the head of the table so far, because I think so many of them are really dumb.
But with
this one, this is the first glimpse, in my opinion, that we actually get Clay thinking like a chess player, essentially. Like, smart.
Three or four moves ahead and like being like, you know what, if we do this, this could lead to this, this, and this. And here we are.
Yeah. Yeah. And avoiding a war, getting answers that he wants to get, and a resolution of his club not being targets of like a bullseye. But he gets to keep his authority in the room and his big dick energy that is so important to him in the conversation that he has.
Fact.
Yeah.
How many punches you got left in that hand? Bam. Yeah.
Stupid question.
I like. Yeah. Yes. Oh, that's right. Stupid question.
Yeah.
So yeah. That's when he tells Unser, he goes, all right, well, call Marcus Alvarez.
Yeah, bring me Alvarez.
Have your sheriffs pick him up, bring him in. And this is probably, like you said, one of the smartest decisions that he's made at the head of this table, being like, you know what, we need to bring this together. We need to actually talk instead of just react and shoot and kill and retaliate and make it work. And he does.
It also goes against what he has been saying up to this point. Like, he and Tiggy have been in there like, no, blood needs to spill.
Blood,
because
blood. We need to kill now. Like,
So much use of blood.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there will be blood. Basically.
This is only about blood.
Right? I don't care who we got to grease or kill.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's like a callback to, like, episode 1 or 2.
So before we get to how many punches does that hand have? Jax has to go to the hospital and have his like super dramatic, very dynamic scene with Tara.
Yeah. Like it because when you first see Jax, you kind of painted him as like this young up-and-comer badass with like no emotion. I mean, he goes in and beats the fuck out of the one dude in the bar in like the first like episode, and then like just everything else throughout. And then this is where we see, oh shit, homeboy's actually got, he's a human.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he's not just this cold-blooded fucking killer.
Well, and there's something to the stuff that Tig has been saying, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he's not the killer that Tig is. He's not done this executional style murder before. And so this is
right.
This is kind of that. And to this point, he's also offered nonviolent solutions in lieu of
Tig
always voting for mayhem. Kill him. Yeah, just kill everyone.
Want to walk down the street and cut his fucking head off?
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you get a little bit of that. And I think it's fitting, too, that he does it in the name of Tara, right?
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're going to kill for anybody, why not for the one you love?
Yeah.
Yeah,
and he doesn't fuck around either. Like, when it happens, that's one of my favorite things about episode. That previous episode is a complete mess, honestly.
Yeah.
From, like, start to finish. But I love the fact that he doesn't play with his food. He literally just walks up, boom, and done. Yeah, that whole story arc is done.
The moment he's like, once a biker squad, always a boom, I was like, oh, my God, holy shit. I remember the first time I saw that, and I was just...
The first time I saw that, I thought they were going to mess around. He was going to get away. Like, it was going to be some silly,
some BS. Because they had, a bunch more episodes left. So I'm like, oh, this guy's clearly, like, the antagonist of the show, which, no, he's not. Just one of the tiny ones.
Nope, he's gone. But then the way that Tara flips, too. Tara flips very, very quickly in this scene where she's very in her own head. She's in this like self wallow, and she's fully expecting Jax to be unaffected by this. She's like, is this how you do this? Like, is this how you, and he's like,
what's your idea?
He's like, when he admits to her that I have no, like, he has no clue, she immediately like flips. She's like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. How can I help you?
Oh,
kind of shit. You know what I mean? Because I think in that moment, she just realized. Straight up executed a federal agent for me. There's something going on in his head too. That's like way more twisted than what's going on in.
Yeah, well, he tells her. I wrote the line down. He goes, "I've never killed anyone like this before, Tara."
Yeah.
And right before, that's when she gets the realization. He's like, "I've never killed a fucking federal agent out of just moment and had to go fucking deal with it." You know, like, he's popped some people, obviously, but. I would imagine in self-defense, whatever. But this was just straight up.
Well, not a distance. And it harkens back to the pilot too, right? Because he's got the chance to kill that dude like point blank.
Yeah.
And the guy dies before
he dies of his wounds already. It's done. I don't have to worry about it. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a cool little harkening back. Also, the previous night, she couldn't take anything from the hospital because they inventory. But now Jax needs her, so she's gonna borrow some things.
She says, "I'll." Right. She totally changes up.
Yeah, like after what they've gone through now, stealing some Band-Aids doesn't seem so bad. She's a rebel or something.
Yeah, it's like I've killed someone. I might as well steal something. Fuck it.
I thought that
was pretty funny too. Here's my little doctor's bag, but oh wait, we're gonna need a lot more shit. Okay, I'll go to the hospital and take some stuff.
Yeah. All right, so how many punches are left in that hand?
That's pretty
much the whole scene.
Stupid question.
There's not really anything else.
Clay just basically goes up there and tells him, like, dude, what the fuck are we doing? Like, you...
This wasn't smart for
you. I know.
So what were you thinking?
At all. Why are you working with the Mayans? Why blah, 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 this? And, he pops off to him. Clay hits him. Like that line says, how many punches you got left? It's his ass one more time. And I like that because you see And they've shown it before how vulnerable, a stupid question, and how vulnerable Clay's. Like, actually, I noticed, I was looking at his hands in that scene when I watched it last night again. I'm like, damn, I don't know if Ron Perlman's just got some meaty fucking suit bones, but it does look like his hands are fucked, man. Like, holy shit.
That's a storyline, too, that I do feel like did not really pay off.
No, I'm going to go ahead. Yeah, I agree, because they talked about it, how it was going to be like his downfall of the gavel because of his hands, and then just kind of bye-bye.
Yeah, and they keep it, right? Like, they don't – granted, I think it comes and goes in spurts when the writing needs it, or when they remember, oh, yeah, we're supposed to give this guy
a race. He needs a shot. That's right.
Yeah,
let's put him in whatever –
yeah, they throw it in, but it doesn't have the payoff that you anticipate the whole time. And maybe that was the purpose. Maybe they were just like, this is what you're going to anticipate. But no, he's something else is going to go way, way wrong. Otherwise.
Way wrong. Yep.
Yeah. So now we got Jax playing Bring a Doctor to Work Day. So that's fun. we get Tara in her element.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She gets in there. She tells Juice, okay, so what you're going to do, she hands Gemma some gauze and some gloves and shit. And Gemma's like, me? Like, yeah, bitch, you're fucking helping. You drag me here, you're helping. It's kind of thing. So he's like, all right, Juice, you're going to pull your finger out and you're going to shove that gauze right in there. And again, we get another one of those nice squeamish squirts of blood as soon as Juice pulls it out and Gemma shoves the gauze in there. That's when she comes up and she calls him little Dutch boy Juicy.
and you sure you know you're, like, Gemma still finds a way to be confrontational. You sure you know what you're doing?
Oh yeah,
guess we'll find out.
I guess we'll find out.
The line I really liked in here that I had forgotten about was are you Irish, doc? Half. That's a doctor.
I'm not sure. Hopefully. Hopefully the house is a doctor. Yeah. Fucking Cameron.
Yeah, you should look into that. That'd be good to know.
Yeah, she goes, I've never looked into it. She's like, well, you should do. It's good to know.
This is the conversation he's actually capable of having when he's not thinking about a specific hit.
Right. It kind of harkens back to when he first got shot I think his last episode, we're in the ambulance and he's talking to Chibs. It's like, you've done this before, Scotsman. He goes, yeah, I was a medic in Her Majesty's Royal Navy for what, at least it's like 2 months?
Yeah.
Like 2 months or 6 months? He goes, 6 months? Until I was court martialed.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, 30, fuck.
I got 30 seconds in, so I'm really, really good at this.
Yeah, right.
So now we got Alvarez.
So
he's in jail.
Yep.
He brings him in. MC Summit.
Clay's. I like that line.
Yeah.
He's like, what? He's like, I'm going to make you suck my dick? Or, like, shiv you? Really? Yeah. You think that's why I brought you here?
Yeah. It's a little on the nose. Like,
all right, well, then tell me. Yeah. Right?
A little on the nose. A little low-hanging fruit.
Yeah. And this is where he offers Alvarez the deal. He tells him, look, dude, we've had our beefs. Shit's getting too nuts. If I offer to sell you guns, can we freaking settle this and, go our ways without more bloodshed?
Yeah.
And Alvarez pretty much looks at him and goes, so you're just going to do all this for nothing?
No.
Clay's like, no. You tried to fucking end me. We're settling that debt.
Yeah.
And Alvarez finally, okay. I think we can make that work. And you don't know what he's talking about at first, but
we're going to find out. Jesus. Yep. That's many things to say. When we get there.
Same. Me too.
These jail scenes they're well done, but they're really streamlined. Like, there's not really much to these like Clay conversations. I feel like in future seasons, if this is under Jax's leadership, like they become a much more drawn out and like dramatic conversation, and it's like very intricate and it makes him look real smart and stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
This, these jail scenes are kind of just broody a little bit. Like, we get the point, but it's just to get us to the next scene.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess they didn't want to make Clay look too smart.
He's an outlaw. He's not that smart.
Right. So eventually we do get to the Irishman's getting transferred, and Clay has to sit down with all of the charters that he's already called in for a big ass meeting about how we're going to war. And he has to tell them all, we're not going to war.
I sat before that. I like the line when they're wheeling Cameron out and Jack's talking to him. He's like, talking to Tara. And he goes, "Hey, is he going to be all right? How's the bleeding? Did you stop it?" She goes, "Oh yeah." And then he looks over at his mom. He goes, "What about her?" And she goes, "I can't stop that bleeding."
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So we're at the big, big meeting with all the other sons. Hap's there and all the other, like Tacoma, Utah, California. I saw a bunch of different cuts. I was looking through when I was rewatching as they were coming in. And you're right. He basically tells him, he's like, "Hey, look, I sat down with Alvarez." And everybody's like, "What the fuck? You did what? And then he tells him, I agreed to sell him guns. We're going to have peace. It's going to be good." And Piney's like, "You did this all without a vote?"
Yeah. He's like,
I set it up. We'll vote it now. Right?
Yeah. Piney has that, like, air about his character of the old man that doesn't give a shit anymore. He knows his place in the club, but he also can't sit back and let tradition die.
Yeah, I think there's a line of his later on in one of the other seasons where he goes, "I literally just ride enough to keep my patch."
Yeah.
Like, that's as much as I care about this anymore.
Yeah.
So, he definitely was not happy with that decision that Clay made, even though, like we just discussed earlier, it was probably one of Clay's smarter decisions.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think he'd agree. If you asked him, he would agree with the direction. He doesn't like the way that it came to be, because it goes against what they built. And that's where the first nine part comes into play in this, like, butting heads between he and Clay. It's a really interesting dynamic, because Piney was supposed to be, like, best friends with JT.
Yeah, right. Yeah, him and JT are the ones who created Sam Crow, and they were the first two of the first nine.
It's something I want to pay closer attention to, because we don't get that much with Piney.
Right.
And a lot of it is very he doesn't have a middle ground as a character in a role in this show. It's either a scene that has, like, no weight to it at all, he's doing nothing, or, like, it's a huge freaking deal and he's very boisterous and involved. There's not a lot of just, like,
there's no image.
He's just
really
part of this. Yeah.
Yeah, right. That's a good point.
Anyway, we do need a hitman for a particular job. Introduce Happy to the chat.
Yep.
And he goes, passes.
Yep, vote passes. Clay asks, "Hap, can you do this?" He goes, "I'll do this for you. It'll be perfect." And that gravelly David LaBrava voice. I fucking love Happy. He's so cool.
Yeah, I'm a fan. Here's a question. Because now we're at a party, right?
Right.
And we're planning another hit. This is the hit that's, like, the request from the Irishman.
Yeah.
The club has a hitman in it. They just put on their retaliation hit.
Right.
We didn't think to maybe involve him in this contract hit that they just took on. Like, we have a professional hitter, and we learned that in the Mayans. That's literally what he does.
That's what he was. He was a nomad. That's why he was nomad, so he could run around and freaking just be a hitman for – and even just – that's just Happy, even outside the club. He'll take hits, as we learn in Mayans, for anybody if they give him money. So
– and we didn't
– But we didn't think about that.
No, we're not doing that.
And then, not to mention the funny thing I thought also at the party scene when they were just talking about that hit with all the other clubs in chapel, and now they're sitting around a table at a party talking club business.
Yeah.
Granted, they don't vote on anything or nothing like that, but it's like, shouldn't you have just brought that up so everybody's up to speed?
Yeah, it was almost like we didn't want this to go too long. Like in one setting, we're going to go
for
to
sure.
another setting.
From here, and then, let's throw a party scene up here, and then they're just going to talk about it there. I have to say, I didn't think about that until you brought that up about the happy thing. Being like, yeah, he's their fucking hitman, basically. Why have Jackson, Opie, and Bobby go do this shit?
Yeah.
Oh, because you want Opie to prove he's Sam Crow and plot convenience. And...
Sure, yeah, we have to have that because we also have to have certain events transpire later that we're not going to spoil just yet because actually – I'm just going to make the shout out. Cousin Amy, that's for you. We're going to not spoil that one because that one's big.
She's the one who does the recap posts on the Facebook page. I love reading those. That shit's funny.
Shout out to you, Amy. Yes, Cousin Amy is awesome. She also did the artwork for the podcast, and she's going to come on for one of these episodes.
Nice.
I don't know how I'm going to write that outline without any spoilers in it, but damn it, I'm going to figure it out.
Right. Yeah, that'll be an interesting one.
All right. So now we have to get the second most awkward bedroom scene in as many episodes. only slightly less awkward than doing it right next to the dead federal agent, because this one's got a lot of cuddling and a lot of pillow talk.
Right.
Then we finally get to the reason that they got Charlie Hunnam shirtless, and they're off we go.
Yeah, well, of course.
Yeah,
you gotta have Charlie. Pretty soon, it's not just gonna be shirtless. Later on down the line,
right?
He's gonna love it. You know what I mean?
Right. There's gonna be a lot of ass shots.
So many ass shots! Holy shit!
Well, they had to give him a reason to get the tattoo.
Tattoos
take a long time.
He's got that tattoo on the back. We gotta show it.
Yeah.
Jax needs a shower scene. Write it in there.
Yep. Yeah, that one.
And Ope is the one where he was the one trying to push that he wanted to be.
Oh, yeah.
To kill Heffel.
Yeah, we didn't really talk about when it should have been happy. Opie is trying to prove himself and Job. It's like, this is forced, in my opinion.
Because
the thing is, the guy who went to prison and just got out for 5 years is not the guy that you send on, like, the first quote-unquote contract hit that the club does, because the club doesn't do contract killing. That's not one of their gigs.
Clay even says it. Contract, you know, hit work, that's dirty fucking money. But,
yeah, this was your blow shit up guy, not your silent killer guy. Like, so it never made sense for him to do it anyways. It's all about this, like, he's going to prove it.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's why I didn't spend a lot of time on it, because I just don't think it fits that well.
I agree.
Plus, that's not the end of the episode. Doesn't it seem like that should be where the episode ends?
You would think so, right?
This thing seems like it takes so long.
Yeah, but no, because then we go on to...
We've got the hit squad, and Opie's super nervous, and this is really good acting with Ryan Hurst as Opie, because like earlier when I was talking about characters telling us things instead of showing us things, he's nervous as all hell, but he's showing it.
Facial acting, not like the pacing back and forth.
Yeah.
Him being and then his conversation with Jax right before, and then even right before the hit, when Bobby comes up and it's like, no, Clay wants him to do this.
Yeah.
This is about him being back in. And or Jax like, all right, whatever, fucking watch his back. And then even when they get up there and the dude comes out the door, and Opie fucking hesitates. You can even see it in his face where he's kind of like, and then Bobby walks up, pop, pop, pop.
Yeah.
And even then, like, yes, like phenomenal fucking acting. Like, they talked about that. I don't know if you ever, have you seen the Reaper reviews?
Yeah. Podcast? I listened to Reaper reviews.
Yeah, with Theo and Kim, they talk about that. Like, you're a good actor if you don't even have to speak something.
Yeah.
And you can just emote it and people know, like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Not really feeling what he's supposed to be doing right now.
Yeah, so it's actually their fault.
Shout out to Ryan.
Yeah, it's actually their fault that this podcast didn't start sooner on this series, because when I started this, they were in the middle of that rewatch, and I'm like, who the hell is turning mine on?
Yeah.
The entire fan base of Sons of Anarchy is halfway through a rewatch right now.
Like, so was I.
I was on it with them. Like, you're not getting somebody to start back at the beginning and listen to you talk. We're gonna hold off on Sons. That's how Harry Potter became the first binge to get started.
Well, there you go.
So between you're here now. So between Opie dropping the ball on the hit and his emotional talk with Jax, where we start to get that little rumor mill of like Jax needs to prove himself, even though he's the VP of the club, like that.
Right. Like, what does he really have to prove?
Yeah. What's he got to prove? And where are these conversations taking place? Like, is this all Tig like whispering? Is that what this is? Because
it seems like a lot of it. Yeah. It seems like a lot of, I mean, even later on, you know, with what happens at the end of the season, Tig and Clay are like, they've got their own little side hustle fucking.
Yeah, but why would Opie always be catching wind of anyone in the club?
That's true.
I would see Bobby overhearing something.
Bobby, I don't think they would. You're right. I don't think Opie would be anywhere near one of those sidebar conversations.
No, because if he's as close a boys with Jax as he's supposed to be, they'd be shutting their mouth about Jax around Opie.
That's very true. That's a fucking good point. I didn't think about that. Yeah, they wouldn't be bringing all that shit up.
No.
If they were trying to do
Anyway, between the two, we've got Tara's walk of shame in a really cringy conversation with Gemma. And I can't.
Oh, yeah.
Gemma is... She's...
She's so, I wrote here, I think this is it. Yeah. Gemma's nose is in way too many businesses.
Yeah. Like, and I understand it's her character. I understand she's supposed to be the mother hen to all these people and to the club and all of this. And she's, you know, her baby boy, Jax, and all of that crap. But she's annoying.
Oh, dude.
That's really all I mean.
I didn't really notice too much when, my first watch through, but on subsequent rewatches and shit, and especially rewatching this episode last night, I was like, holy shit, dude, she just needs to back the fuck off. Like, you are not a patch member, go away.
Yeah, she's and I've said this on the podcast before, she's what breaks the perceived realism of the show within the club culture, and she's also like, she is what I guess kids might call like overpowered, like OP or whatever, in like video games or in stuff
for
like that.
Sure.
Like, she is the OP
Mad
character of this. Yeah. She knows everything. She discerns everything from a glance. She always has her finger in stuff. She's never made to look bad. And I think part of that is being married to the showrunner, and having the character for you.
Right, that's a good point. That might be a little bit of what's up.
And also why it takes long to get the nepotism. Satisfaction.
Ugh. I know.
So now Alvarez is in the park with his kid, and they're talking.
This is
all happening as what you talked about with Opie botching the hit, like these cuts
right.
are happening.
Yeah, it's like the last scene montage. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Opie botching the hit, and then it cuts to Alvarez talking to the Psy.
Let's go get a churro.
I have that written down. I'm like, Alvarez giving up his own son. Let's go get a churro. Like, oh yeah.
And this is he gives him his hug goodbye and happy. Good Lord, just murder chops him in the back of the head.
Knifes him right in the back of the neck, dude, like right in the spine. There's no ways. Oh, man. That last, that scene right there when he's hugging his side, he says, I love you, mijo. And then right as he says it, that's what happens. He turns around and stabs him.
Yeah. He's also lying.
Yeah, clearly.
He does not love you.
No, there's no way he loves you if he's going to give up his firstborn son to fucking appease some other club.
And it was his idea. That's the part that I have the biggest problem.
Yes, I agree. The fact that it was Marcus Alvarez's idea. And I I don't know if how far you've gotten in Mayans, but it comes up at one point.
Yeah, this is actually, I had a hard time with him in Mayans, and even later in SOA because they start to paint him as a family man.
Yeah,
And
he's
I'm
got that
like,
dude. Yeah, he's got that
dude.
the younger kid's son, and he's trying to like, be with his. Yeah, exactly. Like you just, and like I said, it comes up in Mayans at one point where like his wife's brings up a sigh, and I'm like, oh shit, that's dude. Like, holy
Yeah.
shit.
Yeah, it just it makes me struggle with his character. It's part of one of the many problems that I have with Mayans as a show.
Yeah, for sure.
Which I will those will come up at some point in time, but it's the fact that he got to this. He didn't have to be talked into this. This wasn't laid up to him. It
No,
was
like you
Clay
said.
didn't say, "You bring me that shooter," or whatever. For a parent to look at it and, the
No.
cliche is always, I would take a bullet for my kid. He's literally like taking his
Set.
kid, putting him in front of not a bullet, but a blade. And
Yeah.
here you go,
They're like,
sacrificial lamb.
boom, this will keep the peace. Sorry, bro.
Yeah. Yeah, this is
Yeah, it's
important.
and then this the scene right there where he drops him and then he looks up at Happy and he fucking hands him the money. Like, dude, and you
And you paid.
paid, dude, to kill him. Like, oh, I know Happy's a hitman and he doesn't do shit for free, but he's also part of the club. I imagine that was a club hit. Damn, Alvarez.
It's tough. It's tough. And I can like never respect his character again after that.
Yeah, no, I can totally. That's always been in the back of my mind, even when I'm like, oh, cool, Alvarez. And I'm like, yeah, but he also fucking
It's
killed
tough
his kid.
because it's like you clearly didn't have a plan for him yet. And so it's unfortunate that they didn't have the long-term vision of where Alvarez was going because this obviously would not be a decision that the character made.
No, especially later seasons, Mayans, Alvarez. No, that's not what Alvarez is going to do. Fuck no.
No, he's all about family.
Yeah,
He
exactly. At
wouldn't
least that's
shut.
how they write him now.
Right, exactly. He wouldn't shut down his cousin's charter because it's his cousin. Whatever, it doesn't matter. That's all Maya bullshit.
Yeah,
We
exactly.
got now we're really in montage time, right? We've got Tara and Gemma at the hospital. We've got Hit Squad coming back and Jax burning a body.
Which. Here's a question for you there. I was thinking about this last
Fire
night.
away.
Who's he torching? Is it Cone's body? Is it Hefner?
I
Or
think it's
is it
Hefner.
Asai?
No, I think it's Hefner.
You thinking it's Hefner? Okay,
Because
because
he
I
was
was trying
actually
to.
on that hit. I think that
That
he.
makes sense.
But what doesn't make sense is Hefner dropped and they didn't pick him up. So maybe I'm wrong.
Yes, but also, I noticed, I looked at the body.
Yeah?
It's not a big dude.
You know
It
what?
doesn't look like Hefner, and he's wearing jeans.
You know what? I didn't piece it all together until you just said it out loud. But he might have gone back and burnt Cone to make sure.
That's what I was
Yeah.
thinking. That's the only thing I could think, because I was like, he wasn't involved in a size hit. He was
No.
involved in the Hefner hit, but that dude is definitely not fucking Fat Boy Hefner.
Yeah, and they
So.
didn't bring him, which, again, doesn't. Everything
Yeah,
about that hit was
he left the
just.
body and all of it. It was
Yeah.
all just
And the
prepared to fuck
witness,
up.
the little girl just peeking out the window. Like, this
Oh
was.
yeah.
It was a plot hit. That's all it was. It was a plot
Yeah,
hit, and
exactly.
it hit the
Plot hit for
plot. That's
later
all.
on, and yep.
Unser's getting high again. Happy's getting his smiley tattoo.
I love
It's a girl with a
that.
whole
He's just
bunch of
sitting. He's got a bunch. That's
them.
right there shows, oh, this guy does this shit a lot. All
Yeah.
right. He's got
Right.
like fucking like 10 or 12 fucking happy faces on his fucking belly right there.
Yeah, and we didn't think to include him in the other or anyway.
Yeah,
Jax
right.
decides to try to throw the book in, which
Yep.
again doesn't make that motivation doesn't make any sense to me. I don't understand with this
I don't
character
either.
how he got to, I'm just gonna throw this in here. And then he
I'm
tries to,
fucking done.
yeah,
Yeah,
then he
and then
just
he.
tries to pull it out and catch his
Yeah.
arm on fire like an idiot.
Right. And then you go from that to the scene where Hale is handing off something to somebody in a car. Did you know, you notice that scene, right? It's part of the last little bit of montage. It's Hale. A car pulls up, and I'm thinking, my theory is that it's fucking Stahl, because it looks like there's it looks like it like a federal car, and it looks like there's possibly a female in the passenger side. But he walks up, he hands him an envelope, and then he turns around and walks, and he's kind of got this look on his face, kind of like, I can't believe I did this. Like, I'm thinking he called Stall, because doesn't she show up next episode? I
she
want to
shows
say
back up. I don't
at
recall
some
if it's
point,
the very next episode or not. I'm going to find out when I turn it on. But
right?
She does come back. And we
for
still
sure
haven't gotten to their little thing, which is really fun.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yep.
Yeah, I could see that being a setup. I actually didn't write that part down.
Yeah, I know. I noticed that. That was the first time I've actually noticed that scene. And I was like, wait, who the hell is he? And then I thought about it, and I was like, that's the only thing I could think of, is it's got to be him contacting Stall, being like, look, Cone is gone or whatever. He took off. We need you guys in here because something. Maybe it was
Cone's
to do
supposed
with
to be arrested. Cone was supposed to be facing
set
charges.
Off. You're right.
Yeah. It's never explained how he got free and came back. Like, that's just all, again, very much plot convenience.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Up.
Like, they just dropped him off and left outside of town limits and left or what? But
yeah, I guess. Yeah, I was focused on Jax trying to burn the book. The only thing I could come up with is like, if it was supposed to symbolize his like inner struggle. But it just
possibly it is a really weird scene, because like you see that he's like being affected and like kind of absorbing this info he's getting from JT's manuscript, and then all of a sudden it's just like, man, you know what, fuck this thing, is this just causing me shit? Wait, no, I'm
no,
sorry,
I want it back.
Fuck, it's all burnt.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. But that's it. It's a wild ride. We save one guy, kill two more. We got biker bosses making moves. We've got Opie all in for money, but not money. And then we've got Jax on an emotional roller coaster. Tara doesn't know what the hell's going on. And Gemma is chaos. Did I miss anything?
No, I think he nailed it pretty much on the head.
Okay.
Gemma being chaos, absolutely.
Okay. I don't even remember who said it. It might have been on Reaper Reviews, but I heard this whatever thought. Jax is the sun. Gemma is the anarchy.
I've heard something like that too, where the reason it's called Sons of Anarchy is because they are the sons of Gemma, and Gemma's the anarchy. Yeah, I've totally heard that before too.
It's true. Gemma is chaos.
Absolutely.
It's a fun episode. Is there anything that we missed or any thoughts that you have to get out?
I don't think so. And yeah, it really was a fun episode. I was really glad to actually sit back and rewatch this one again. I haven't watched it. I haven't watched the series in a while, other than editing my recut. It was cool. I was like, oh, okay, this is that episode with Alvarez, and like, oh yeah, they just killed Cone. Okay, cool. So yeah, it was cool to step back into it.
Yeah, it was, and it's a better episode than the last one, than when they did
old
kill
bone,
Cone.
Not Old Bones, the other one.
Yeah, The Pool or whatever.
The Pool, episode 8, yeah.
It's tough. That one I felt like it was a mess, but this one is very much less of a mess. Still a couple of questions, but it was good.
Right.
I like this one. If you're still here, that means that you're a serious fan of Sons of Anarchy and probably the podcast at this point. So I want to remind you that back in the beginning of 2020, I started writing a fan fiction sequel that picks up the Abel and Thomas story. I got 11 chapters into that, and I have decided to share them with my patrons. So check out patreon.com/belatedbinge. There's a link in the show notes if you want to hear those in audiobook style. As of recording this at this very moment, the first 6 chapters are available, and I will keep churning them out as quick as I can get them recorded and edited. I'm not holding them back. It's not like a weekly release. As soon as I get them done, they're on Patreon for the patrons. So
nice.
Check that stuff out. Before we go, let's rewrite Sons of Anarchy one small change to each episode at a time. For this episode, what if Jax doesn't ask Tara to come help with the Irishman?
Oh,
yeah.
That's a really good. Oh God, that's a good.
People can take that in a lot of different ways, but
you really
give me yours.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Obviously, Tara being, you know, the surgeon and the medical professional, if she never came around and never helped, you only got Chibs, who's only 6 months a medic. I don't see Cameron surviving. I see him dying and that not being very good at all for the club. Because one, the Irish have already lost McKeevy, their supplier for Sam Curl, and now their new supplier's dead. The IRA is not going to be too happy with Sam Curl at that point.
No, I can't imagine that they would. There's also the, well, you brought it up when we very, very first started this podcast about the ending of season two when you joined.
That doesn't happen either. I didn't even think about that. You're right. That doesn't happen at all. And we probably, holy shit, you know
there's
what?
There's just no season three of this series.
I was going to say, we probably, we don't ever go to, God, it drops it to a six season series at that point. You just completely skip Ireland completely. And then, yeah, damn. They don't ever go to jail, which means they don't ever make the the cartel deal.
So many things
don't happen if
Tara doesn't show up.
That's a thinker, man. That's a thinker.
Yep. So like, we'll be on social media at Belated Binge across TikTok, Instagram, Facebook. I have X. I don't really do anything with X. I don't even know what to call X. It's weird calling it X. I still call it
Twitter, and I just recently got rid of mine and was just like, I don't do anything like you said either. It's just whatever.
Yeah, it's tough. So if you're following on X and you're wondering why the account is not super active, come follow on like Instagram or something, because that's at least got stuff going on. Or you can join the exclusive Facebook group for listeners of the podcast. You can talk to both of us in that group. We are there. We are talking. We are chatting amongst, like, you know, five or six of our closest podcast friends. And
our dozen, as mankind would say, our dozens and dozens of fans.
Yeah. All the tens of people listening.
Exactly.
Yeah. And let us know what you think of the outcome would be, anything we missed, all of that stuff. And best ideas will make the podcast.
Hell yeah.
Plug everything. Thank you for doing this, by the way, on like such short notice. It was nuts last night. It was like 10 o'clock at night, my time. And I was just like, hey, what the hell? Let's just see. And you're like, yeah, let's go. It's like, well, shit. All right, cool.
Right. Yeah, no, I
appreciate it.
I'm sorry for anyone if I look haggard or sound haggard at all. I've been up since 10:30 last night because I haven't gone to sleep since work because I've been way to do this. But I said,
now I feel bad.
No, you're good, man. I've been excited. I've been drinking coffee, fucking ready to rock. So not a problem. That being said, I'm Nick Tuggy. Check out Tuggy's Top 10 Podcast on YouTube. There is a Facebook page, but I no longer have access to it because I got hacked out of my fucking original Facebook. So I no longer have, there is a page, but I won't ever respond to it because I have no access to it. So check us out on YouTube and Spotify also. And again, thanks, Zach. This was a lot of fun, dude.
Yeah, man. We'll get you back if you're willing, but you're welcome to sleep before it if you need to sleep.
I think I will do that.
If you enjoyed this episode, Rebinging Sons of Anarchy, give us a follow, leave a review, all that stuff. Subscribe on YouTube. BelatedBinge.com has all of the links to everything and the voicemail feature. If you want to yell at us for any of our takes, you can leave a voicemail there. Thank you for listening. And remember, life is short. Buy the motorcycle. And when you do, wear a helmet. Dress for the slide, not the ride. And make sure you take Belated Binge along for the ride.
That's right.
The Belated Binge Podcast.